Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How much do you know about who and where you came from? And could a surprising revelation about your family history change the way you feel about your identity? Maude Newton's fascination with charting her family tree puts her very much in line with a renewed American interest in genealogy, a journey that today can be assisted by the apparent precision of DNA analysis and instant online access to centuries of public records. But as she's discovered, there may also be reasons for moving into such explorations with caution, or at least a clear understanding of where our discoveries might lead. Writer Maude Newton wrote the cover story for the June issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called America's Ancestors. Craze. Maude, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me.
What do you think we are seeking when we try to trace our ancestry?
Well, it's a subject that so many of us are passionate about, and I think there's both a scientific, a sort of factual basis for our explorations, and a superstitious one. There's a kind of ghost story aspect to the research, I think. We're trying to figure out who we are by looking at these people who are long dead. And in researching our ancestors, we're really trying to find out about ourselves.
To explain all the things we haven't understood.
Exactly.
You tell us that your mom is like a natural storyteller, but her stories didn't feel related to genealogy for you until you happened to Google your grandmother.
That's right. I Googled my grandmother's mother, actually, on that side, and I discovered that I am descended from one of the founders of Northampton, Massachusetts, who had some surprising things in common with my mom.
And so the idea is that even though we have never met these people, that there must be something to those relationships.
That's right. I have a complicated relationship to this idea. On the one hand, I'm skeptical about it, as I discuss in the piece. And on the other hand, I'm just very drawn to it. My mother started a church when I was a child. She started a church in my living room. She had a rather sudden and feverish conversion. And as I started delving into my ancestry, I discovered that that long-ago ancestor, or his wife at least, was accused of being a witch. And that's my ninth great-grandmother. I have the exact relationship in the Harper's piece. And my mother had all these other female preachers in her family line. And so I just find this sort of these echoes down through the generations really fascinating.
Even things like physical resemblance can be interesting if we happen to, you know, have access to photographs or paintings of people who have come before.
Absolutely. That's been one of the most gratifying aspects of this, to find photographs of people whom I never knew I was related to. And to see those physical resemblances to me or to my sister or my parents. And I discovered that my husband is descended from a Confederate soldier, and he really has my husband's eyes. I found a picture of him online, and that was really uncanny.
I love things like that, but then I also have to remind myself that I've seen people, like, you know, walking down the street and thought, you must be related to a woman I went to school with, and of course they're not related.
Absolutely, and that's been one of the things that's really surprised me as I was working on the article. Well, actually, over the years preceding my work on the article, as you mentioned, I've delved into DNA research, and that's a dangerous thing to do for many reasons, in part because of the privacy considerations, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But, you know, there are these various people to whom I'm related, and I would see pictures of them, and I would think, oh, well, I must be related on my mother's side or my father's side because of some sort of imagined resemblance. And then I would discover after my mother took the test that no, it was actually the other side in some cases.
What kind of emphasis have different cultures placed on keeping track of their ancestors throughout history?
That's a really interesting question. And I think it's fair to say that at least in all the cultures that I've studied so far, and I'm working on a book about this, but in all the cultures that I've studied so far, it was primarily an upper-class activity. It was the people who were well-educated. It was the people who had the money and the time to dedicate to that kind of record-keeping. And then slowly, as at least in this country, as the ability to access records and whatnot became much more available to average people, the practice has really grown. And so what you see is that there was this sort of rarefied pursuit in the past, this sort of tying of people to kings or to other lofty ancestors. And now you see people who are actually just interested in discovering the truth of their origins.
Which is really a different thing. I mean, to be able to say I'm special because my ancestors were special is very different from saying I would just like to have some history.
Absolutely. And then, though, that takes us back to that question you were raising earlier of, well, what does this really tell us about ourselves, though? What do we really find out about our ancestors if we find them in the census and learn that they were farmers or wheelwrights or whatever the case may be?
And even then, I mean, unless someone has left accounts of these people, knowing what their occupation was tells us very little about the kinds of people they were.
Absolutely. And then, of course, there are, you know, there's the heartbreaking fact of slavery and the fact that so many people were recorded essentially as objects. And so it's very, very difficult for people who are descended from slaves to find out about those ancestors. And that's something that I have really been interested in trying to work with. I have a number of people who most likely are connected to me because my ancestors owned theirs, and that's a really terrible and sobering thing. But it's also really, really interesting to try to figure out exactly how we're related to one another.
You touched on the fact in the piece that even immediately after emancipation, many people found themselves unable to locate lost relatives who had been separated because they were kept in slavery.
Absolutely. You know, people went to churches, people searched in person, people put ads in newspapers that were devoted to that very problem. And I'm certainly not going to say anything here that's groundbreaking on the subject, but in some ways it is the problem of this country. And these new tools, for better or worse, give us a more direct way of engaging with that and analyzing the way that we all actually are connected with each other.
You, I'm not revealing anything that's not there in the piece, but you talk about having been troubled your entire life by your father's attitudes about race. Can you, as a way of preparing for what comes next, will you tell us a little bit about how he thinks about race?
Absolutely. My father is someone who, partly I think my interest in ancestry is a sort of effort to understand him. He was a very racist person and really prejudiced against anyone who was different from him. And so he was very racist against African Americans. He was racist against Chinese Americans. He was incredibly intolerant of people who had any sort of mental or developmental issue. He subscribed to Oliver Wendell Holmes's idea that, quote, three generations of imbeciles are enough.
So, I mean, your father, what you discovered was that he was descended from a family, as you mentioned, who had kept people in slavery.
Absolutely. And this was something he was actually quite proud of. And I remember being a child and being, you know, growing up in Miami, you know, it wasn't exactly the Deep South. And so the things that I encountered outside of the home really didn't jibe with his ideas, which were that slavery was a benevolent institution, that my ancestors had been good to their slaves. Ideas that are just horrifying, I think, for most people to hear, and ideas that horrify me now, and ideas that I don't understand how he can have, and I would like to, I think. I would like to understand what causes someone to think that way.
I wonder if you have to make, you know, you have this thing that is slavery and you know, almost universally acknowledged to have been a horrible, horrible time in our country's history. And then you have to allow that to correspond with people that you may have had direct experience with that had memories of those who actually kept the slaves. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying? So in other words,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that entire side of my family, my mother's side is Texan, actually. And I've discovered through DNA that, and then through paper records, that she also had some slave-holding ancestors. But the family I knew of on her side was, you know, they were very poor, and they all lived near Texas. And so there was that side of my family. And then there was my father's side, which was, you know, very, very a sort of, in some ways, a caricature of what you'd expect people from the Mississippi Delta to be like, although I will say that my grandparents were not racist in the way that my father is. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, his sister doesn't share any of those ideas. But yes, I mean, they all had firsthand memories of, you know, if obviously not slavery itself, but of the Mississippi Delta in its aftermath, you know, in my grandparents' case, in the early part of the last century, and in my dad's and my aunt's in the middle part of the century. And I have to say that I just always was repelled by those stories. I really couldn't relate to them at all. Again, as you know, a sort of someone who always felt spiritually Texan and was, in fact, growing up in Miami, I just couldn't really understand what they thought was so great about that whole plantation system. And yet I'm compelled to go digging in it and find out everything I can about it.
Writer Maude Newton is my guest. She did the cover story for the June issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called America's Ancestry Craze. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can learn to navigate the ever-changing digital landscape with the Social Media and Digital Communication Boot Camp, June 4th through 6th at SMU in Plano. Details and registration at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with writer Maude Newton, who is the author of the cover story for the June issue of Harper's Magazine called America's Ancestry Craze. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, ask a question, tell a story, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, send email to think@kera.org, or send us a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. So, Maude, nowadays, in addition to looking through public records, we can also go to DNA testing and sort of look at what that reveals about ourselves. But I want to first talk about the other online offerings, things like Ancestry.com, which is a service that you've tried.
Absolutely. Ancestry.com, if you know a little bit about your recent ancestors, your parents, your grandparents, ideally also your great-grandparents, you can really, if you're willing to spend a little time, find quite a bit of information. And it's really very addictive. If you have a certain kind of personality, you can look at census records. You can look at draft cards. You can see what people said their religion was on those draft cards, or who they were supporting. And in the past, they've done away with this now, but they used to have this really kind of silly and extremely speculative, in fact, speculative is a kind word for it, but really entertaining feature called Find Famous Relatives. So that feature told me that I was potentially extremely distantly related to Mark Twain, for example, and on my mother's side, Lucille Ball, and that kind of stuff. Though it's very manipulative, it's also incredibly fascinating.
And I guess they don't probably have just horrible people in those lists, right? Those famous relatives are probably people, mostly people that many people would admire.
Most of them, although on my father's side, one thing that interests me is that I am supposedly related to, again, you know, this is highly dubious, but I am supposedly related to Pretty Boy Floyd and Richard Nixon.
And I suppose you say it's manipulative because it just gets people, that's the thing people grasp onto when they start doing a little of this research.
Exactly. I know for myself, I'm the only writer that I know of in my family, and I think part of my fascination with the idea that I might be related to Mark Twain or Emily Dickinson or F. Scott Fitzgerald or Jane Austen, all of whom show up in my lists or showed up in my lists of possible ancestors. I found it really kind of fascinating, as though it had anything to do with me, and as though most people in this country who have the kind of colonial ancestry that I have aren't related in some way, given the mathematics, to people like that.
Well, it's funny because it made me think about people that I've known who are adopted, and certainly people who live with their birth parents often feel like they were dropped into the wrong family, but many times people who were adopted are so curious about their family relationships, and in some ways, it may be not so much more similar than what you're talking about, these distant relatives that may have nothing to do with you being a writer.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. You know, I do know some people who were adopted, and I've tried to tell them what I can, but often our relationship is so far back that it's not really particularly helpful to them. And I'm speaking here of the DNA test mm-hmm. that I mentioned in the article. And yes, but I have spoken with a genetics researcher whom I mention in the article. She's really very, very steeped in this stuff and quite brilliant. She's worked with Dr. Henry Louis Gates on his show, and she has helped a lot of people identify their birth parents. And in some cases, I think it is the sort of mismatch and underwhelming experience you're describing. And then in another case, she was telling me, I mean, so much of this couldn't fit into the article, but she was telling me about a guy who just always felt that he didn't belong in his family. He was this sort of short, not very athletic, super brainy kid in a family of smart, but, you know, very athletics-focused, tall blondes. And she believes that it was a switched-at-birth scenario, that the hospital mixed up the babies and mixed up a Cohen baby with, I can't remember the other C name that he was raised with, and there's some evidence for this. And it's not ironclad yet, but I found that fascinating.
And then you have to ask this question about, and there, I suppose there's no hard and fast rule, but sometimes there's a point at which it's better not to know the truth, and at other times, knowing the truth is the only thing that will allow people some peace.
Absolutely, and I really do think it's a very individualized thing. You know, I certainly haven't found any of the answers to the questions I was looking for. I was trying to find out about my dad's family, where his Newton line came from, and I've tracked it back, I believe, to North Carolina in the early 1800s, but that hasn't really provided the kind of amazing illumination that I hoped it would. You know, on the other hand, I found Mary Parsons, the accused witch I mentioned, and I've found so many other ancestors who are just so interesting. And then I've found, to your point about things you'd rather not find, I found one document which is supposedly a transcript of a will from one of my ancestors on my dad's side, in which he was bequeathing the people he owned as though they were chattel along with his other property, and that was a really horrifying thing to discover.
I suppose even if you suspected that, seeing that evidence has got to be very disturbing.
It really was. I've discovered, you know, quote unquote slave schedules, which list the ages of the people who were owned and the genders, but don't list any names. It was just a terribly dehumanizing institution, and to see these records is, you know, sobering, really doesn't begin to cover it.
Almost anyone who's done this DNA testing comes away struck by the fact that everything we think we know about race is not what we think we know, right? Can you talk about what you discovered about yourself and what many people come to discover about themselves when they do the thing where they send off a saliva sample and get a rundown of like the past 500 years of family history?
Absolutely. So one of the probably the most interesting recent examples of this was that a white supremacist who had wanted to found a town that was all white in North Dakota received the results of his DNA test on live television and discovered that he actually had more sub-Saharan ancestry than one would normally share with a great-grandparent. In my case, I think I was hoping to find more diversity. It's an irrational wish, and perhaps a sort of liberal cliche, but I guess I at some level felt that finding some kind of diversity in my background would mitigate the wrongs of my forebears in some way. And I discovered that I am almost exactly as Caucasian as I have always appeared, predominantly Northern European. I have 0.1% North African ancestry and 0.2% unclassified, so they haven't figured that out yet. And the irony of that is that those genes must come from my father because my mother doesn't share them.
So Were you able to discuss this with anyone else in your family? Were people interested in this information?
I don't really think that most people in my family are particularly interested. No, I think they are mildly interested. I'm not in contact with my dad, unfortunately. But you know, I told my mother, she was mildly interested. My sister was mildly interested, but no one else has the kind of passion for this sort of investigation that I do.
We're also reminded when you think about, you know, you can have 0.01% genes from this place or that place, of the one drop rule that really wreaked havoc for a lot of people who were denied lots of rights based on the fact that they were perceived to be less than white at a time when that mattered more than anything.
Absolutely. And that is something that I feel like this research brings me up against time and again. You know, I have corresponded with a lot of DNA relatives, possible third, fourth, and fifth cousins who really can't trace their backgrounds. And in some cases, we share surnames, and it seems pretty likely, not the Newton surname, actually, but other names predominantly on my dad's side that, you know, and so there's a suggestion of a close relationship there somewhere in that line, but it's just so difficult at this point to figure out exactly where we connect. And I think, you know, in the piece, and of course I did so, as I mentioned, I'm working on a book, and I've done so much research that obviously couldn't fit into a piece of this length. But one thing that I did mention is that C.C. Moore, the genetics researcher whom I referred to before, said that within a few years, there could be a universal genetic family tree. And, you know, in other words, a tree sort of showing scientifically how everyone on the planet is related to everyone else.
Back to mitochondrial Eve? Is that as far back as they think they can go?
Well, I think at this point, it's still a little speculative. It's still a little unclear how it would all work. But I think that that this has happened, this world of DNA research has happened so much more quickly than anyone thought it would. It started with 23andMe, which has the medical aspects of that site have at least been temporarily shut down by the FDA. It was a medical site, a site that people went to in order to find out about their predispositions to various diseases and whatnot. And some of the people on there were really interested in this kind of research, and slowly I think the company realized that it wouldn't be that hard to enable them to see how they were related to each other. And from there, you know, this entire world, Ancestry.com has its own DNA testing now too, Ancestry DNA it's called. And so there are all these different places where you can try to connect with people to whom you are related genetically.
I think the idea of a universal family tree is really interesting, and I suppose this is the optimist in me. I think, well, great, we can finally all realize that we spring from the same place as human beings, and we all have this brotherhood or sisterhood. On the other hand, there are some people who feel like they have a great deal to lose if this sort of information is just out there.
Absolutely, and I too find it really exciting and to think of all of us finally realizing how we're all related to one another and finally recognizing that humankind is a sort of brotherhood and sisterhood that can't be denied. But, there is a history in the world and even in this country of some pretty terrifying eugenics programs there were mandatory sterilization laws for quote-unquote mental defectives, which was a pretty broad and nebulous category at the beginning of the last century. And, of course, we all know about the Holocaust, which is sort of the ultimate symbol of what can go wrong when this kind of information becomes available and people can classify and categorize and come up with ideas that certain people are less valuable than others.
And there are even people like Richard Dawkins who have said we ought to look again at eugenics.
Yes, absolutely. As I mentioned in the piece, Dawkins says that, you know, I believe it's breeding a racehorse for speed or something along those lines is really not so different from, or rather, forcing your child to take music lessons is really not so different from breeding a child who might be musically talented. And he compared this to breeding racehorses for speed. And, of course, part of the problem with breeding animals for speed is that then they develop other kinds of genetic problems. And there's a book out now that wasn't out when I was writing the piece. It's Sharon Molam's book. It's called Inheritance, and it suggests that actually our genes are constantly changing based on our environment, based on what happens to us. And so I think this is a really dangerous road to go down. And there are also a lot of sort of vague things that are being scientifically identified, such as the supposed empathy gene, which I and my mother do have the genotype for, but my father, I presume, does not.
My guest is writer Maude Newton. She wrote an article called America's Ancestry Craze, which is the cover story for the June issue of Harper's Magazine. We'll come back to our discussion in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join it, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Summer registration is now open with courses in art, history, literature, communication, piano, and Portuguese. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with writer Maude Newton, who wrote the cover story for the June issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called America's Ancestry Craze. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we hear from Martha in Frisco. Hello, Martha.
Hi. Thanks for my call.
Sure.
I am going to be 53 this summer. I was adopted when I was 8 days old by two amazing people that I love very much and have considered my parents my whole life. But the one thing that I missed out on was having somebody that looks like me and having a brother and a sister and being able to look in someone's face and see mine looking back at me. And I also would like a chance to thank my birth parents for doing what they've done for me. But it was a closed adoption, and I don't have really any way to go back and find out who they are, I don't think. Never tried it. My mother's still living, so I don't want to hurt her feelings by digging too deep. But I was wondering if she had any advice for me, how this might help me figure out, maybe find somebody that looks like me, that has my same mannerisms, that has, you know, a lot of the same traits, and maybe find out my medical history. I have no idea what that is or any of that.
Well, thanks for your call, Martha.
Martha, absolutely. I should preface all of this by saying that there are a lot of reasons to be cautious about putting your DNA into a database that will keep it forever. But leaving that aside, yes, absolutely. There are these tests do right now, 23andMe is not allowed to provide the medical information, but traditionally it did, and perhaps it will again. And these sites do enable, in particular 23andMe, enables people to look at the precise places where they match genetically with other people. This is not a situation where you can just take the test and find out the answers to these questions immediately. It would require a lot of work and digging on your part, or maybe bringing in some sort of researcher, either volunteer or otherwise, to help you out with this. But a lot of adopted people have found their birth parents by taking one of these tests, discovering second, third, or fourth cousins, getting information from all of those different people, and sort of working from there and actually collaborating with them and asking them if they know of anything in their families that that might be a lead.
I feel terrible because I've done 23andMe and I have never responded to any of those contacts by people who say you may be related. I mean, how do those, you have spoken to people who have contacted you. How does that typically play out? Do you sort of volley emails back and forth until you figure out what everybody's looking for?
Well, it really depends. I mean, often the answer is, this is my tree on Ancestry.com. Take a look. Tell me if you'd like any explanation of anything. Sometimes there's a common surname, and so then I will tell the other person what I know about my ancestors in that line. And, of course, it's easier if the person also knows about that line. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a lot harder at this point to find the answers if you don't know, if you're adopted. But it's not impossible. One thing that you can do, and this is sort of, it was beyond the scope of the magazine article, and it's a little technical, but you can actually see on 23andMe the precise place on your genome where you overlap with someone. And if you start finding multiple overlaps in that same place, that can be a lead that helps you figure out ultimately how you're related to someone.
So anyone who undertakes these things ostensibly is looking for the truth. But in history, there have been many occasions in which people have chosen deliberately to misrepresent who they were, where they came from, sometimes in search of better opportunity. Of course, this wasn't available to everyone based on our notions of what race is and what it means. But some people have essentially just completely left behind who they really were to take on a new identity. And those individuals might not want their deceptions to be revealed.
Oh, absolutely. C.C. Moore had also spoken about her brother-in-law who, discovered that he was descended from Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. And those, quote-unquote legitimate ancestors in those lines really don't want to be tested. They really, that's not fair to say of all of them, but many of them aren't crazy about the idea that their forefather had this relationship with this woman who is not white, and that the descendants of that relationship are related to them.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone to Gregory in Dallas. Hi, Gregory.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I'm calling about, I was not raised with my real father, and my brothers and sisters had a different father. But when I first met my father at 17, 18 years old, you would swear that I was raised with him at birth from the way he kept his closet, refrigerator, his handwriting, his thoughts, his inner wishes, desires, desires to be an actor, just on and on and on. You would think that I was raised with them, and I wasn't at all. My point being, I think we inherit a whole lot more than just the color of our eyes or hair. In fact, maybe we even inherit deja vus or, you know, thoughts or fears or anxieties, desires, habits.
These are precisely the things that I'm fascinated by. I wonder about that. I'm both skeptical about it and compelled by that idea. My sister strangely moved to the town of Northampton before I discovered that our ancestor founded that town. And I've always felt, or at least I tell myself, that I've always felt surprisingly at home there and surprisingly comfortable there. And I wonder about that. Is it some sort of hearkening back to my ancestors? Does it indicate some sort of affinity between them and me that's genetic or stretches across the generations somehow? And again, C.C. Moore, who's just such a fascinating person, was talking about how the first time her brother-in-law and her sister visited Thomas Jefferson's Monticello with their daughter, she fainted. Hmm. And that she had never fainted before, and she never has since. And that was before they even knew of their relationship to the place.
We have an email from Gary in Denton who wants to know, now that Ancestors.com, I don't know if that's different from Ancestry.com, offers DNA testing as a feature of their genealogy services, what happens to that DNA and the results, and is it subject to any kind of third-party access or government access?
That's a very good question. And Mark Gerstein and Dove Greenbaum wrote a piece in USA Today last year about this very question, about in light of the revelations of the NSA snooping on so many of our online activities, what is to prevent them from snooping on our DNA and, in fact, trying to compile a database that would assist with law enforcement and perhaps how could we possibly predict to what ends that information might be used? And then the Sharon Molem wrote in his book about long-term care insurance companies potentially discriminating against people based on this information. And when I was researching this and I spoke with 23andMe and Ancestry.com about it, they said that they would comply with legal subpoenas. They would comply with legal requests. So while this information is private in some sense, we really don't know how private it is, and we really don't know ultimately, as it sits in these databases for many, many years, what the end result of creating this sort of repository of information will be.
We have an email from Edgar in Shady Shores who says, I've tried to access free public records online, and when I type something in, I get a message back that says the information I've asked for has been found, and to enter my credit card number, that's not free. He says, I have no problem paying for information, but I want to be sure that I'm not giving my credit card to a scammer.
That is a real concern with this pursuit. There are a lot of companies that are, shady is a nice word for it, and it really is important to be careful, as you give over your financial information to receive these records. I tend to go through sites like Ancestry.com if things can't be obtained in some other way. Often, though, I will write to the government agency itself and find out what the protocols are for sending a check or paying by credit card and receiving the documentation directly from the source.
Do you think, Maude, that your search is driven in part by wondering why you're not more like your father, your biological father?
I do wonder that, and I wonder about the ways that we are alike. I wonder about the ways that we're different. I think I feel with both of my parents, who my mother is just this amazingly charismatic figure, and I adore her, and yet I can't relate to her religious passions at all. And I think in this digging, I hope to find some sort of answer, and so far I really haven't found one.
What about the idea that, although obviously our genes matter because they have a lot to do with our bodies and perhaps even the formation of our brains, like every human being born is an individual. Can we look for too much information in what exists either in DNA or if you just simply want to look at the family tree?
Absolutely. I think ultimately that is sort of tension around this research. It tends to take on this kind of deterministic flavor. And at least, and particularly in this country, I think we all do like to think of ourselves as individuals in control of our own destinies, people who make our own decisions. And so I do think that's a real concern, that this kind of stuff can lead to a feeling of fatalism or something, rather than a sort of embracing of who we actually are and of the opportunities that we have to make our own way. And I really want to say that I think Andrew Solomon's Far From the Tree, which is actually about sort of the opposite of what my article is about. It's about the ways in which we look outside of our families and outside of the, the religions that we're raised with and whatnot, to communities that are a sort of home to us, places that make us feel more ourselves. I think that's an interesting counterpart to this pursuit.
We just have about 30 seconds left, but I wonder if you've developed a strategy for coping with disappointment when you do, in fact, hit a dead end in your research.
My strategy is just to leave it for a while and then go back eventually.
Sooner or later, something might open up.
Exactly.
Writer Maude Newton wrote the cover story for the June issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called America's Ancestry Craze. Maude, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.